You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by footballstadiumprince.com. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case
Elder
scenario for City
for
right here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally redeems himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself. Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. And it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
And another goal!
And it is now 2-0 Minneapolis City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
Welcome back, friends of the feather. This is the People's Pitch podcast, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City Soccer Club. I'm John, and with me, as always, is my trusty steed, the Nate Morales. Nate, man, talk about a weird week, whether it be personal lives or soccer lives. Like, it was what I like to call a smorgasbord of things that happened this week, and we will dive into all of that. But I will say this, we had lopsided losses. We had Smog kill off a game. There's more U.S. national team things. I have an unusable recording with Gus, who we were trying to bring on for this week's show that we are not going to use. But there was really only one constant, and that was the output from the UPSL Futures boys. So,
yeah.
I mean, what else did I not cover?
No, I think that's it. Show's over.
Yep, show's over. But we will lead off talking with the Futures versus Superior City and their 2-1 victory, and then we'll do a little bit of recap there, and then we'll talk a little bit about the preview of the Maple Book clash coming next week. Then we'll talk a little bit, very briefly, about the USL2 5-1 loss versus Rochester FC, the Loons, and then a little bit of a preview of the St. Croix Legends coming on Father's Day. But before we start, Nate, let's talk about the U.S. men's national team and what the living hell is going on over there.
Dude.
With the recent Nations League match last night versus Mexico, and then the impending return of one Gregory Berhalter. Which one would you like to start with first?
Let's start with Greg.
Greg, old Gregory.
Yep.
So, okay, I'll intro this. News came down literally during the first half of the game from The Athletic last night, which I think was just sensationalism at its finest. Like, how is there any other way to break this news than to overshadow what was happening in a soccer match versus your biggest rival,
yeah,
right? Like, why then? Why? I get it, but come on, man. Like, this is why people look at United States soccer and they're like, what the fuck? Like, what's going on over there? Like, why would you break that news? Because then not only, like, you break that news and there's so many questions and not enough time to get answers, and it wasn't official yet. All indications today is sources say Berhalter is set to return. Then you get players who just, we'll talk about the game here, come off and they don't know at halftime, unless they're checking phones or someone tells them at halftime, that the guy that, well, we'll get into that. Then you, at the end of the game, everything that happened during that game, then it's like, oh, so what do you think of the news of Greg Berhalter's potential return? And then, you know, like, can you imagine asking Gio Reyna that with a microphone and a camera pointed at him?
No kidding.
Like, it's just, it was poor timing. I don't know if it was journalistic timing or it was U.S. Soccer Federation timing. It was poor. So essentially what we're talking about is, after months and months of deliberation and legal, potential legal ramifications and investigations and a coaching search, the U.S. national team, potentially, I'm doing air quotes here, is set to announce Greg Berhalter's return as a U.S. men's national team coach after his layoff due to the investigation into what happened with the Reynas. So I got a couple thoughts on that, Nate, but I'll pause there and get your thoughts first.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think the timing is suspect. And a lot of it we saw yesterday, like, basically Jesse Marsh's agent must have heard that, like, we're not going with Jesse. And so when I'm sure he fielded his daily calls about, hey, is Jesse coming to the men's national team? The agent was just like, no, not going to happen. Like, he's tired of answering questions. Patrick Vieira. Right. No.
An article yesterday about Vieira being interested in the job.
I know. But I'm just saying, like, you know, on the heels of that, or, you know, Marsh's agent in one day is just like, no, it's not happening. They're going in another direction. I don't know. Somebody had to get antsy and say, like, well, might as well. The secret's out. We're not going with Marsh. It's just like, why they could have waited a day, because, like you said, this Berhalter news overshadows this game, which is actually kind of insane. A game that had its
own. I can't wait to talk about it.
Had its own narrative going into it, and its own, like, there was a lot of excitement going into this game, because it was Baligan's,
which is, yeah, there was a
fucking rad, first of all, that we got him, right? It's a huge rivalry against Mexico, and it puts us into this Nations League final, which is fine, whatever. But it's just like the fact that this kind of squeaked out as part of the day is a little upsetting. And also then to keep moving with this, it's like, it's such a boring move. You know what I mean? It's just so, like, it's like, yeah, we just stuck with them. It's like, oh wow, thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not gonna go until you're totally finished, because I got a lot to say.
That was it. Okay. You got a lot to say. You go ahead.
So first and foremost, how do you feel if you're BJ Callahan, who was the Berhalter's second assistant, who is now taken over from Anthony Hudson, who quickly turned and went to the Saudis and left this team right before a tournament. And then you have this guy coming in and he performed as the coach. Like, I don't think that I've seen, and we'll get into the game here, I don't want to go too far, I don't think I've seen a U.S. team set up that well in a long time. And it was done so by a guy who was second on the bench to the guy who you're bringing back. So how do you feel for him, by the way? Like, and then there's news of, like, he might not start until after the Gold Cup. What is he going to have to do? Like, what?
What is he doing in the meantime?
Yeah. Like, is there, like, do they have to, like, tie up some other loose ends that we don't know about? Like, why would you not just bring the guy back for Copa America?
Did they?
And the Gold Cup.
Did this news get leaked because they were worried that we would lose this game, and it'd be like, and then it'd be like,
that we're gonna lose Greg Berhalter to Club America. Who cares? No, let him go.
Right? Who cares about that? But I mean, like, do you think this news got leaked because it's like, well, if the U.S. gets beat by Mexico, we got to talk about something.
Well, not after the first 10 minutes, when Mexico really did the only thing that they did the entire game besides just get yellow and red cards. Then it was all U.S. dominant, which I'm excited to talk about here. I keep prefacing that. But I don't know. But if you're going back down to the search, how many millions of dollars did the Federation spend on legal fees and headhunting for a position where they just went back to the guy that they had? Like, yeah. Are you kidding me?
What a waste.
Like, what a waste. And then I thought that Charlie Davies at halftime, I thought he brought up a really good point, which was then completely squashed today when they revealed how much Berhalter was making before he went on hiatus. And he brought up the fact that we don't have the money to go out and get, like, a Pep Guardiola, because we can't, with the equality lawsuits and everything that happened with the women's side of things, which I think the lion's share of us all agree was the right thing to do. I'm sure there's some naysayers out there who don't care about women's rights and all that stuff. And, you know, that's their opinion. But for all of us who, for
hopefully
all of
you're
us
not listening
in,
to us.
Yeah. For all of us who live in the logical world, everything that was done there was appropriate. But what Charlie Davies said is that you can't go out and sign a Pep Guardiola for like $15 million and pay Vlatko, who is the coach of the most success of the number one ranked women's team in the world, like $1 million, which I totally agree with. But look at how many millions of dollars we spent on lawsuits and headhunting for this job. That could have gone back into what I think a lot of people, I think Twelman mentioned it today, that it, or it was Stuart Holden, it's like, that's a non-starter. Like, the money's there for Vlatko to get a raise and the rest of the women's staff, but also to bring in the right candidate to help us try to win a World Cup on our own soil. So now that happens, and now you're trying to sell me the bill of goods here that Greg Berhalter is the right choice to try to win a World Cup with this group of arguably, I think, the most talented group we've ever had, a very young group who's already been through a World Cup, now playing on soil, don't have to qualify, can learn a new system that'll take us over the hump and actually get us relevant in the world soccer landscape. Yeah. And you think it's Greg fucking Berhalter? Like, like, come on, man. Like, who's this new sporting director we hired? Like, I know he's got some credentials with development from an academy perspective and overall just like program development at, you know, in the Premier League, but like, this is what he thought is what the hill he wants to die on as his first decision. Like, this, it's something is wrong.
Or when he started, did someone just be like, trust me, trust us, this is the right move, don't overthink it, just do it.
Right.
And then focus on, you know, starting your new project.
Right. So this is the last thing I'll say. I'll go to the other side of the coin and why I think this isn't a terrible decision. There's a couple factors here. I don't necessarily agree with all of these, but there's some truth in here. Number one, I think outside of Gio Reyna, which I don't know how that's going to all go down, and he played fantastic yesterday. So there's that. But I don't know how the whole Reyna situation is going to go down. The old guard has been completely booted out of the Federation by and large. So you think that there's going to be a handshake and they're going to, you know, there's going to be a make good there. But the core, so outside of Reyna, Ricardo Pepe, the guy who literally scored key goals to get the U.S. into the World Cup, was not taken by Berhalter. And the dude hung up the phone on Berhalter when he said he wasn't going to go to the World Cup. Like, I don't know if you saw that interview. He's like, as soon as he told me, I said, okay, and I hung the phone up because I was so mad.
Yeah.
Like, and then he goes out and scores against Mexico on his first touch of the game. And he's behind this new signing that everyone was paying attention to, who I think played like absolute garbage yesterday. But we'll get into that. So then you have Ricardo Pepe, and then you have any of the other naysayers that were in the locker room. But the core in your Yunus Musa, your Pulisic, your McKinney, your Adams, Jedi, he also was one, and Turner, all said, like, we actually liked playing for him.
Yeah.
So I think that there is some credence there then to bring a guy like him back, even though I don't think he's the right choice. So there's that. The other part is that Berhalter did a really good job of flipping a lot of dual nationals to come to the United States and lock their future in, which is a really tough thing because we saw it start with Klinsmann and getting every German player that was out there.
yeah.
And
the Joneses.
Yeah, the Joneses.
Yeah, Jones. Yep. I know what you're saying. That was two World Cups ago, basically, right? Though.
Yeah, so he started all that. And then I thought Berhalter did a really good job of casting a wider net. So then we went to England. We went to England. We went to Nigeria. We went to Spain. We went to the Netherlands. Like, we started getting all these players who are very high performers. So he did a really good job there. Another reason why he could be kept, but I don't think it's a really good reason. The last one is that he already knows the player pool. And that's the biggest one for me. Like, Greg Berhalter is a smart enough former player and current coach to understand how getting us out of the group stage, like, there were some deficiencies there, which was scoring goals, which we have at back home here with Minneapolis City that we're dealing with. But to get them over the hump tactically, I thought that outside of the England game, he was very poor in the World Cup, which is what you need from someone who has that next level of ability from a coaching perspective to bring to you the table with this talented player pool that he does are arguably no better than most.
Yeah.
So I think that like that piece is good, but it all my signs point towards what I previously said. Is this guy really who you think is going to win, potentially get you further into a World Cup on home soil? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Prove me wrong though. Prove me wrong.
I got a couple points to that too. I think like Greg is like showing up to like a 3v3 tournament and getting handed like the gray shirt and being like, you're the gray team. It's like, oh,
yeah, beige.
Okay. I guess that's cool. But I think you're right. Cause there's nothing like, oh, this guy's tactically awful or like, what a genius. But I think there are some.
He has the highest winning percentage of any U.S. national team coach in history.
Right. So but, there's that. Right. So I think there's some positives to it, especially like you said, he knows the player pool. He has got he's been able to get his guys like Yunus Musa. He's been able to get his guys like Sergino Dest, get his guys like Balogun, right? All these guys like we are no longer at the phase, John, where we need to watch the four like the Belgian first division and be like, who's the next puzzle piece? For the men's national team, yeah. Right? It's like we got him
playing in Sweden,
right? Like you know, we got the guys, and Greg knows them, and at this point, it's like who's gonna sneak onto the team with an impressive performance out of the MLS? Basically, is what we're looking at, right? It's like so how do you
position
take
battles?
Yep, exactly. So how do you take these guys to the next level? Is really really kind of the point you're trying to make, and I'm with you.
He might be able to do it.
Look what he did. Look what he did against like that game against England. England was phenomenal. You know, we fell on our face against Wales, but then like we were able to get out of the group against Iran. Like we looked pretty good, and I think if we continue to dominate like we did against Mexico, segue. I'm excited, but if he's not going to start until after the Gold Cup, it's like anyway. That feels weird to me. So let's talk about Mexico because that game was nuts.
Yeah. Why don't you go and I'll provide my color.
So I caught up late last night, early this morning on the game because I did not see it. Did not watch it live. I had it recorded. And you know, every game against Mexico, it's like you're kind of expecting, similar to now how we should expect a game against Rochester to play out, in that like sometimes guys are just gonna like jump on your back and ride you a piggyback. Sometimes the goalkeeper is just gonna slide and handle the ball out of the box and not get the call. And that those kind of like these like they're always there's something about the way Mexico plays that is just like their talent level has dropped, and so they're making up for it by playing like absolute maniacs.
Just the shithousery.
It is. And the game suffers because of it. And you saw that last night. Like you said, yellow cards getting thrown around, red cards getting thrown around. The young guys from the US got involved in that. I think then of course you have the issue where you've got the Mexican fans are such pieces of shit that it's just to like halt the game with their homophobic chanting again.
I mean,
it's just
and they're supposed to host the World Cup with us.
You can't. So the game was an absolute shit show, but in the end, it was like, wow, U.S. looked good.
I have never seen a more dominant performance from a U.S. team outside of playing like Barbados.
Yeah, well, and especially because like, Mexico usually brings you down to their level when you play them.
Well, they did. They did with the off the ball stuff, but they didn't with the on the ball stuff. And I thought, like, the first 10 minutes of that game, I got, like, it was squeaky butt time. I was like, oh, God. Like, what's this? What's our setup going to be? And then all of a sudden, like, a switch went on, and Pulisic is driving for goals. Weah is driving for goals. Reyna is driving for goals. Like, we saw a motivated, high-pressing soccer style that I thought Greg Berhalter was going to bring to the table. And then we saw build out of the back, very slow, methodical, possession-based stuff coming from Berhalter. And then Callahan was like, fuck it. I might only have one game to coach, so I'm going to go at these guys, our most heated rival. And they did that. And then once we got one goal, and it should have been 4-0 instead of 3-0, Pulisic rockets that one into the stratosphere from the 6-yard box. And, you know, outside of that, you know, in the first 15 minutes, that was the tide that was like, we're going to get one. It's only a matter of time. And then we got one. And then it was like, oh, we're not satisfied. We're going to get another one. And we're going to get another one. And I thought Mexico had zero threat until it was 2-0 and all the bullshit started. And I was watching it with a neighbor of mine who's not really a soccer guy. And he was like, is this how these games always go? And I was like, pretty much. He's like, this is exciting. And I'm like, yeah, it is. But like, here's what Mexico is doing. They have already conceded failure and they are going to try to do whatever they can to get out of this and hurt us as much as possible, whether it's physically hurt us or take guys out of the game for the final, which is exactly what they did. But I'll tell you this. I thought that, the referee clearly let things get out of control. Gio Reyna getting absolutely headhunted and the, by a guy who's already on a yellow card and nothing was like, and then guys getting red cards for defending themselves and having to make contact with someone else's neck. Like that's right. Like that's your rationale here, guy. Okay, fine. But what I liked was that there was fight by the US. Like, we don't care if we're, you know, this is our home and we're kicking the shit out of you and you're not going to try to fucking push us around. So I liked the fight back. I also thought that both red cards for the US were defending themselves. I mean, you look at McKinney coming out of a scuffle, which threw him surrounded by four Mexican players into their bench. Like, what do you want the guy to do? Just get pummeled on?
Right.
Like, that is a policing by the officials to make sure that stuff doesn't happen. And then the Dest one, too, was, yeah, he retaliated from getting shoved around, which, you know, if he would not have participated in that, it would have been two red cards for Mexico. But why did we have to get there? And then even after that, I told my buddy, I was like, you thought that the U.S. was going to attack in the first half. Like, wait till it's like 10 on 10 and they have more space, because Mexico's just going to keep lumping balls forward. Yeah. And then they were doing that and they were getting a little bit dangerous, but nothing with substance. So I thought, like, end to end, the soccer was great. But all the other bullshit was like, and I told my neighbor too, I was like, watch, they're going to go after another guy who's having a great game and he's going to, and to try to get him knocked out for the next one. And then it happened to Dest. And I was like,
there you go.
I was like, they need to call this game, not give it 12 more minutes of stoppage time. They need to call it, because it's going to get way worse here if they let this thing go on. And then you had the stoppage for the homophobic chants and you had them keep going. And I was like, can we just please get out of here? Like, please.
Yeah, one of those games where you just want to, like, can you just escape? Anyone remaining on their feet, please leave.
Yeah, but it sets us up for, I think, a tasty matchup with Canada. I will say one thing. Like, I thought Gio Reyna was superb on the day. But Yunus Musa at the six, covering for Tyler Adams, he played fantastic. Like, constantly breaking up attacks, like, dribbling through and out of pressure. His distribution was on point.
Yeah,
he made Weston McKennie look non-existent because as the layer in front of him in between he and Reyna, because he was doing the work of two people the whole entire game. It was very like N'Golo Kanté.
Yes.
Like, that guy's doing the work of like three people right now. So just don't worry about your job. He's doing it for you.
He's gotcha. Yeah, I like Yunus Musa a lot. I think if he continues to develop, I feel awesome. He's gonna be great for us. In 3 years or whatever. What year is it? Anyway. That was the game. We're off to play Canada, and that's going to be exciting, because I think the Canadians are going to feel like they were done wrong in the World Cup, like they did not show up as they had hoped to. And
they also
only
beat Panama 2-0, so let's not get too scared.
Yeah, this is their redemption. We'll see. Yeah. They might come on strong, but who knows?
But which game do you watch, Nate? Do you watch that game, or do you watch the game we're going to talk about here in a little bit?
Ah, that's a good question. So we want to
on
start
Father's
with,
Day. It's your choice. It's Father's
it's,
Day.
Yeah, it's my choice. We're going to start with the good news from last week from the Minneapolis City front, and that is that the Futures, they just keep on finding ways to win. It's been kind of a fast and furious time in the UPSL. Really crowded fixture calendar crammed into the end of June, and that had the fixtures playing St. Croix and then Blackhawks and then Superior City all in a matter of days. And that time saw the Futures pull off two comeback victories with that Blackhawks draw in between. It was pretty solid. The second of those comeback victories, of course, was Sunday against Superior City. You know, John, we talked about Superior City leading into this game, that it was more like, is this really the Duluth backup team anymore? Was it, are they guys that didn't quite make Duluth and were hoping to keep playing? I'm not sure if they're affiliated at all with each other. And really, I was expecting to see a few more players that I recognized on this team, but
yeah, so was I.
But you know, the Futures had been riding high. They came back for that 3-2 victory against St. Croix. They kind of fell flat against the Blackhawks 1-1. So they were looking to continue to win and stay at top of the table.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So the roster for the night, from a starter's perspective, was Bodine Gostad in goal, Carlos Robles, Carter Hermanson, Griffin Price, Johnny Bear, Mason Gillian, who I thought played fantastic, by the way. Yep. Noah Hermanson, captain Rigo Rilano, Tomas Mena, Tyler Beaupre, and Zach Soucy.
Soucy's back. Carter Hermanson's got 6 goals in the year, by the way.
Yeah, he does. He's playing fantastic. And then from a reserve perspective, you start to talk about that depth that we mentioned last week. You have Alvaro Arce, Colin Brin, Daniel Linder, backup goalkeeper, Jordan Ross, Joe Swellen, Miles Akibi, Mutu, and Parker Flynn. All of those guys, if you go back to last year, are starters on this team.
Yeah, so, especially like Mutu's been around the club for a couple years. Like you said, Jordan Ross has been kind of doing great. Alvaro Arce probably deserves a call up. Like, these are good players. Just
Miles Akibi, I think, should be. If Mason wasn't playing so well, Miles would be the starter at right back.
Yep.
Embarrassment
of riches for Coach Jeremiah Johnson.
Yeah, absolutely. So you look at a really strong squad to try to go into the playoff and finish out the regular season for Coach Johnson.
Like I said, I was looking for some players that we might recognize in Superior. We didn't really see any except for Mally Lumsden, who I think we saw play for Duluth a couple years ago. Yeah. Marcus Carvalho was really their only player on the field that looked any good, and he was the guy that scored their goal.
It was a really nice goal, too.
Really nice. Really nice. Number 23. So he was something to look out for. But otherwise, you know, these guys were definitely what we would consider standard local UPSL level players.
Yeah.
Nothing to be afraid of.
My input on the game was, it was clearly the Zach Soucy show. He was in charge the whole game.
Yeah.
And you would have liked to see a little more output from the attack outside of Zach. The Zach attack was really all we had. But we have to mention, too, that the goalkeeper from Superior made a bevy of saves.
Yeah, I think he made like seven saves on the night.
Seven saves. And I'd say out of those seven, five were, or maybe four, were where he was actually put to the test, which could have been goal scoring opportunities.
Yeah.
And then the rest were just kind of right at him. Good positioning. But without him, I think that, you know, the scoreline goes a little bit further. But the Crows did go down on that Carvalho. I mean, it was a banger in the first half, and then it was another like, oh, we got to come from behind. But with the firepower of this roster, we saw that we can do that. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this: I thought, like, by and large, everyone on the roster played great. I will say this though: my only key input here is, if you're listening to this, Mr. Carlos Robles, you are a great soccer player. 1-2 touch Carlos was almost untouchable on the day. 3+ touch Carlos was where we start getting into turnovers and the runs already happening, because you take that third touch and fourth or fifth touch. Eliminate that. Go with your first instinct, play the ball quick, fast, direct. See a pass, make a pass, and you're untouchable. Please do that for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the thing, is if when his first instinct was to keep his head up and try to figure out where he needed to play, it was great. And he was really valuable in that central role, right? Nobody was near him. But it was the times when he would put his head down, and it was almost always
turn
the exact same
pressure.
Move where he would turn back into pressure, right? Instead of taking his space or keep the ball moving in that direction, he'd turn back into pressure and try to out dribble somebody. He'd have to turn back again to avoid that guy. And all of a sudden he's just running himself in circles in the middle of the field. And that's, John, I think why we didn't see a lot of offensive threat beyond Zach Soucy, who can just run up the side.
Well, yeah. A lot of the runs were completed by the time his third and fourth touch came.
Yep.
But when he was playing first and second balls in, those runs were happening in the moment, or they had already started to materialize, and his ball was leading where the run should be going. Yep. So I'm not trying to shit on Carlos here. Like, Carlos had a good ship, but as we're going into do or die soccer time, 1-2 touch Carlos is what I'm looking for, not 3+ touch Carlos.
Gotta grow.
So next up could be a title defining match for the Young Crows, setting up against table bottom dwellers in Maple Brook. They've had a rough year, Nate.
Yeah.
No wins, 3 draws, 5 losses, scoring only 7 goals, which ironically is all that the Crows have given up this year. I don't think that they're going to put 7 past us this game, but that's rough. This one on paper is all but over, but that's why we play them, Nate.
Yep.
And if there's any dip in form, which we haven't seen from the Crows this year, with maybe a mixed renewed hype, from Maple Brook. It's their last game. Maybe they go into it with a little more incentive to try to win one versus, and maybe be a spoiler.
Yeah.
This one could be interesting, but we hope it's all done and dusted and we lift another trophy.
Yeah, John, I'm looking at this Maple Brook roster and, you know, they're young. Martin Brown Jr. is on the roster. That feels weird. I think he's a coach, but maybe he had to suit up. Because he does work for Maple Brook, which is funny. There are three Moraleses, which is pretty exciting for me.
Jake Simons.
And, yep, Jake Simons, who we know. So,
And his brother Ish, who was a future player. Yeah.
Ish has a goal scored on the year.
Luke Anderson was a former City player. So there's a little City. Jacob Tau was a futures player. Logan Weller was a trialist at one point. So there's some decent players here that are in here. Manuel Boateng was a player for Sioux Falls Thunder in the past. So there's some good talent on this. I just don't think they're all showing up.
Yeah, they're not putting it together. So let's hope they continue to not put it together, because currently Minneapolis City is top of the table. 23 points on the season, 9 games played, 7 wins, 2 draws. Right behind us is St. Croix. 7 wins, 1 draw, 1 loss over those 9 games. And who's left for St. Croix to play is FC Minneapolis, the Ian Sandys.
Yeah. Let's get this wing wizard. Let's give him a good send-off on his first day.
I think in both cases you have to assume that Minneapolis City and St. Croix will win, and that this is how the table will end up, which puts us as the regular season Midwest-West champs and into the playoffs.
Superior City plays Vlora.
Yeah, and Vlora actually has another game to make up. So Vlora has two games to play against the Blackhawks that got canceled on Wednesday, and then they play Superior City. So there is a chance, albeit I would say an outside chance, for Vlora to
squeak in
leapfrog
here.
Yeah, St. Croix, but they would have to win both their games and St. Croix would have to lose. So I think the table is what the table is, unless something crazy happens in Maple Brook, and we're looking at raising a regular season trophy. And then, like you said, it's real soccer time, do or die, onto the playoffs.
But so go ahead. We found in the NPSL that the magic number was 29 points in order to win the title. So now what we're looking at here is, I'm looking at the math correctly, the magic number to win the title is the first team to 26.
Yep. Yeah, so which is not a lot of room for error, because that means
zero room, you
zero losses and 2 draws.
Yeah, you lose a game and you're done.
Yeah, yeah. It's the new face of the UPSL Midwest West. So that match against Maple Brook is on the 21st. It's away. It's a 5 p.m. kickoff at Maple Grove High School. So if you can get out there, it'll be a good time.
Well, Nate, what happened to Edor Nelson this past weekend?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. It was rough, man. We were talking at the top of the show that it's been kind of a rough week for us. A lot going on.
Slog.
And this game didn't help any. Last Saturday, we welcomed Rochester, the other loons, to the Nelly, and I think going into that game, we had said, like, 1-1 draw away at Rochester. It was an early game in the season. I think after the Bavarians win, hopefully we have our stuff together and we'll be able to show the real Minneapolis City. And I'm going to say that a 5-1 loss is definitely not the real Minneapolis City, so nobody panic. But
no.
But this game was a real rough one to watch. It was real disappointing. There were a lot of you and I have a lot of criticisms that we may or may not be able to levy against some of the officiating and some of the playing. But in general, this was real tough. But at least we got a city goal out of it.
Yeah. So roster on the night, from a starter perspective, was making a second start in a row with Kalen Matta-Castillo in goal. And then here's where we think some of it happened, Nate, in the fact that you had you had three new starting backline members next to Jonah Garcia. So you had Damon Humphrey making his first start, Curtis Wagner coming off of a really great cameo appearance against Bavarians starting next to Jonah Garcia, and then Aiden O'Driscoll, who is just a very good soccer player, and we already know what Aiden can do. Then you had a late scratch in who was our player to watch on the broadcast in Griffin Gierche, and he made way to Jameson Charles. And then your midfield was Brian Lopez, Stevie Lamar making his insertion into the center midfield for his first start of the year. And then your front three in Bechtel, Goldman, and Morgan was untouched. And then from a bench perspective, you had Siefkin, Clement Archer-Puig, Jamison Charles obviously started. You had Andrew Szczesinski making his first appearance of the season. Faden Owuru-Okondo, also first appearance of the season. And then you had Dennis Mensah, and then a newcomer, Mark Gallagher from the University of Washington, who just got in. So this seems like we have a walking wounded over here on one hand, and then we have the remaining players on the other hand. That's what I see from this roster, Nate.
Yeah. Yep. And, it was kind of a surprise. Definitely the Gierche scratch as we were looking at him walking around in the stands with his street clothes from the booth. And we're like, wait a minute.
He's the player to watch.
Yeah.
What do we do? We're like, hey, Jonah, you're the player to watch now.
But there could have been, I think there's some excitement, at least for me, looking at this, because Kalen had just come off of a shutout. Curtis Wagner, like you said, stellar cameo appearance the game before.
Well, he got red carded, so there's that.
Yeah.
So we talk about that.
Yeah, we will. I think Stevie Lamar was, it was good to see him get a start. And then, so it was like, okay, we could do this. And given that we had only drawn, and Rochester hasn't looked that threatening, we could do it. But things did not go our way for sure. I think there are five players, John, that I want to talk about really quickly as far as I guess Wagner could, but I want to talk about quickly. The first is Kalen Matis-Castillo. This is exactly when we were talking about Kalen's getting the start against the Bavarians, and we're like, oh man, when we had previewed him as well, this idea that like he had a couple of phenomenal games last year, and then he had to battle against his team kind of letting him down for some of these other games last year where he had a lot. He let in some goals, in 2022, and it really was tough. It really was not necessarily all his fault. And I'd say the same thing happened this time, right? Kalen coming off of a really phenomenal game, great shutout against Bavarians, some amazing saves to keep that clean sheet. And then, man, he's out there and there are five goals sliding past him over the course of the night. That's gotta be really tough on the young guy, but I think that he can hold his head up high at least and hope that he won't, that's not the real Kalen, is really the Bavarians Kalen and not the Rochester Kalen.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I see one of those five goals actually being his fault.
Yeah.
Which is really tough to say to a goalkeeper who's facing point blank shots, but it happened to Oscar Herrera against RKC. Like, yep. Just kind of hung out to dry, and you're like, well, sorry, man. Really wish you could have stood on your head today, but you didn't. So, oh well. We'll get him next time. The one person for me that I'll add real quickly before you move on is Curtis Wagner. I think what we saw from Curtis in his cameo appearance against Bavarians was not what we saw on the day against Rochester. And I don't think it was a capabilities or an ability perspective that we need to look at here. I think it was more of a situational perspective. I think there was a lot of misassignment in front of him that put him into a lot of 1v2, 2v3 scenarios with Jonah Garcia, and one of the two of them, or him in particular, had to commit to a ball and or chase down someone who might have a little more speed on him as a center back. And you saw that as an indicator when he absolutely smashed a guy in the box and giving the Loons a penalty. But then comes the red card, which was the second yellow, which I thought was an officiating thing. The referees indicated that he kind of kicked out at the opponent when he was on the ground. I thought it's a big, huge human being who went up and won a header and fell and was trying to get up, not trying to stomp on someone. But then goes the red card, and then all the wheels came.
Yeah, that was that was the thing, right? Is like, and we can talk, not to start going too negative here, but as we move on, You know, there was, he was put in some tough spots. Like you said, 1v2, 2v3 situations where he had to slide over because of that Damon Humphrey start, another young guy, similar to James Gardev, decide, you know, getting his shot at the outside back spot, and just like bad touches, bad passes, bad turnovers.
His unwillingness to take the space given to him in the attack. Like, that's something we see in Carson Peña that we like. He likes to eat up ground and get forward.
Yeah, that's why Zenge was so good last year.
Yeah, but Humphrey seems to be reluctant to go at and eat that space up, which didn't free up a guy like Eli Goldman into a more 1v1 situations, because they just sat back and two guys were essentially bookending him.
Yeah, so tough for Curtis, and we'll talk about maybe potentially the officiating here in a second. The other player point I want to make, John, is is Stevie Lamar starting, I thought, was great. I thought that when he had come on as a late game sub, he added a lot of energy to the field. But also, man, the guy is so tall, and all of a sudden the foot is out there. His ball control is great.
Quick too.
Yes, and he's just able to use his size and speed in a way that we don't really have any guys in that spot that can do that. And I will say this too: he had pretty much our only two chances in the first half.
Outside of Eli's goal in the second half.
No, I'm saying in the first half, right? Yeah, Stevie had two shots saved. He was in really good positions. I thought he was doing great. And so subbing Stevie Lamar off at half was kind of a head scratcher for me over someone like Damon, who was making some, you know, his touch was not great. Like you said, he wasn't taking his space, and he was kind of hanging the rest of his defensive line out to dry. So that was interesting. I'm not really here to have a dialogue about coaching decisions, but whatever. But I would like to see more of Stevie in the future. I thought I was really impressed by him.
Yeah, I mean, I see him as kind of that false nine who sits underneath someone like Hakeem.
Yeah.
Hakeem's, when we talked about it before too, is that it was one of our keys to victory on the day. Even though those didn't happen. But what we saw is that, like, Hakeem likes to occupy the space in deep to get the ball and hold for the hold up play and to allow the runs to happen off of him. And what we talked about was the lack of willingness, I guess you can call it, of the central midfielders prior to go join the attack and fill that space, where oftentimes you saw Stevie as the point person playing higher than Hakeem and almost interchanging in positions. So I do like that, as having him as someone who maybe sits underneath the strikers, because he showed it and he had two opportunities.
Yeah. And I think that that's another reason we like Clemente too, when he comes in, right. Mm-hmm. He's able to kind of be that
just energy.
Yeah. That energy and that, and add that dimension behind Hakeem, whereas Hakeem himself drops back a lot and isn't really in that attack. You know, his assist to Shea Bechtel was from like deep, like the 40-yard line. Like,
not the
spot you necessarily need your striker to be for a majority of the game. So
unless you have someone filling the space, which is what you need.
So I don't know. I think overall in this game, John, we can just say that it was, you know, we touched on it quickly in the Mexico recap. Just this idea that, like, man, these players were not, it was not the cleanest game. I'll say that.
No, it was not. And there was a handling outside the box that we believe we saw by the Rochester goalkeeper, but we can't get that back. So we get back, Nate, we get back to what I like is we have the opportunity for us to collectively. Before that, we'll briefly talk about the smorgasbord cancellation for Manitoba. Poor air quality killed off our game this week, and we're feverishly working to get that rescheduled. So stay tuned to social and your emails, folks, because we'll be getting that rescheduled as soon as humanly possible. A little tough for us to get that scheduled when the Canadian teams only come down for larger road trips and not they don't necessarily come down for one-off games. So that one's going to be a little tough to reschedule, but we do have to get it in. So it will happen. We just got to figure that out. But anyways, as far as like what we see, because we don't have that game, is hopefully a good in the collective regroup with some added rest due to the match this week being canceled.
Yeah.
And then we go to our Father's Day away trip to St. Croix Legends. So we know we have some injuries. Hopefully those get locked up and cleaned up in an off week, I guess you could call it. And then we can get back from a training perspective, to training in the things that we need to sharpen up on. So I think it was actually kind of good for us to take a breath, even though that breath was filled with smog coming from Canada, which ironically, we played a Canadian team and we had to cancel due to smoke coming down from Canada. That was interesting. But for me, Nate, this Legends match has some real implications to it. Can the Crows bounce back and take advantage of the Legends squad, who, since they beat us, has been trending in the wrong direction? But both of these teams, you know, they get up for each other, and it's a good match. You know, we saw it in the first match with the Nathan Donovan show just kind of going off on us. Can we stop that? But it also has implications for the 2024 Super Cup.
Yeah.
So it will be a big swing for the Crows to get back into the running for one of the two USL2 slots for next year's Cup. So when is that game, Nate?
That is going to be this Sunday, Father's Day, 7 p.m. kickoff at Stillwater High School. Right before that, the Legends are playing that FC Minneapolis game. They've got a triple header because then their girls are playing before that. So it's a busy day at Stillwater High School if you're a Legends fan. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
But we will. I'll be there, John. For that city game, cheering on the Crows. I'm a little nervous about this one. Like you said, there are some big implications, and St. Croix does not let themselves slip against us. As we see them slipping against a team like Med City or something like that, right? So hopefully we come away with the win and we split the series and we stay in the race to be able to get into the Super Cup.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, that'll do it for this week. A lot of rambling, kind of a crazy week for us. Thanks again to our wonderful show sponsor, footballstadiumprints.com. They've got top gear for all the lower league teams, whether you're from Minneapolis or, I don't know, Milkweed, Oregon. I just made that up. With everything from mugs to t-shirts to sweet prints of lower league icons like the John Bizworm, you can get a Matt Elder t-shirt. You get some Edor Nelson Field prints. Don't forget to use that code CROWS10 for 10% off everything you purchase. And remember, all those U.S. orders ship right from these states, so there are no pesky international shipping charges. Don't forget, Minneapolis City is a 501c3, so please consider a charitable gift to the club that loves to give back, whether that means through a membership or through just a donation, a tax-deductible donation. If you're interested in getting a hold of us, we've made it simple. You can hit the club up on Twitter at MPLSCitySC or get us at the show at The People's Pitch or email us mcscpodcast@gmail.com. Now is the time in the show when you and I remember that we have unread emails that we need to get to. I am Nate. That was John. Hey, it's a big weekend for both sets of Crows, but we're going to be back with you next week to dissect what could be another cup for the club and potentially bowing out of another competition. But until then,
yeah. Fuck you, Greg.
Whoa.